We on? Now then, Ray Winston here. The real one. Close enough. Doing a new podcast with me mate Tony. Soprano, that is.
Oh, how you doing?
Talking all the big stuff. Birds, scraps, films.
And of course, men's mental health. With studio guests such as arch feminist and top broad Deborah Francis White and disgraced scumbag comedian Dapper Laughs.
Something for everyone. We're trying to be better men, ain't we, Tone?
That's right. We're bad boys done good.
Available on YouTube and to download on all good audio platforms. Go on, get off your hands, you dopey c***.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of the world-famous podcast, Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
How you doing? How's everyone doing? Are you good? You well? It's the end of summer, getting into autumn and winter. Well, we're in autumn now, aren't we? It'd be autumn, and then it'd be winter. And then we get our big coats out again. Well, maybe. I don't know. It was quite warm last winter, wasn't it? An odd one. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. Rambling again. I've had a great time lately. It's been really nice. I went for a swim where I live in Lee-on-Sea. Went for a swim there. The last knockings of our summer. We've got a seal. Got a seal comes up. He comes up to the cockle sheds, and as I wander around, and he gets a lift there on the paddle boarders boards. Wonderful. Having a little seal wandering around. Lovely. This week's guest is Matt Stocks. Now, Matt Stocks, formerly a DJ from the Kerrang radio station, and I met him through the Distraction Pieces Network, Stu Whiffin and Chris Glasson. Big shout out to those boys again. And we hit it off straight away. He's such a nice dude. We had our mutual love of music help push the conversation along. He's a top boy. Everybody is. Everyone that comes on, every guest has been extraordinarily brilliant. It's been really nice. Again, thank you to everybody for listening. Thanks to everyone for your messages and all that caper. If you wouldn't mind getting up on the socials there and giving us the old thumbs up and the five stars, and that pushes us up the ratings, and then people take notice and they come and have a look at the old, they come and have a listen to the old podcast there. So this week, Matt Stocks, I had him in, he was living in Birmingham, he's moved to London now, but I was up in Birmingham gigging, doing the Birmingham Glee. And so we went up. I met him the night before. We had a drink and a wander about. And then the next day, he came to my hotel and we sat and we recorded an episode of Insane in the Membrane. We also did his masterful podcast, Life in the Stocks. If you haven't had a chance to listen to that, you should. It's absolutely first class. The guests that he's had on there, my God. I mean, he's had some. I mean, Gene Simmons from Kiss, of all people. Some wonderful guests. Josh Homme, I believe. Johnny Rotten himself, you know, John Lydon. I mean, John Lydon doesn't do interviews. So to bag such an incredible beast as Johnny Rotten, that's the next level greatness, man. So, so here we are. Matt Stocks. How you feeling?
I'm good, dude. I'm a little bit rusty. Last night, we were obviously out after your show, showing you my town, as I like to do when people from out of town come in.
Yeah, man.
Because I tour a lot as well, and I find that if you're, especially, you know, when you're part of a band and part of a touring group, you've obviously got your comrades.
That's right.
But when you're doing what I do or what you do, it's a quite a solitary experience.
Yeah, man.
So whenever I'm in a different city and I know someone there, or if I don't, I like to try and meet someone there. And I've always been really grateful when people have sort of taken me under their wing.
Definitely.
And shown them the town. So I always try and do that. And I've been living back in Birmingham now for about 2 years, but this is where I was born and raised and grew up. So,
yeah, right.
And worked for many years on Kerrang, which is based in Birmingham.
Yeah.
So I know all the bars, all the barmaids, all the doormen. So like last night,
well, that was obvious.
We can walk
last
in
night,
for
man.
Free. And, yeah. Do you know what I mean? You get free drinks. And...
I've not experienced that for a while, actually. And I've been to Birmingham many times, never been shown around it, because I've just it's just one of those, I don't know why, because I know people from here.
Yeah.
But I don't know, really. It's just never happened. But so last night was the first time I've seen. Like, we were wandering down, I'm like...
Proper Birmingham.
Never been here before.
Yeah, well, I took you at one point a complete, like, detour, didn't I? And you were like, where are you taking me? Like, some industrial estate.
And then when I walked out, I'm like, I'm nearly back at the hotel.
Oh. Yeah, which way did you take us? You're meant to live here. I realised that en route, but I was like, I've gone too far now. I'm going to have to just pretend like I know where I'm going.
Yeah, it was fine. I got to see the underbelly of Birmingham, which was nice.
And then, obviously, I got sharked by a nice young lady.
Yeah, you did, mate.
It's a rare treat, that, isn't it?
Do you know what? I've been in situations where two people are obviously into each other and something's happening, and then gradually, as the night goes, you go, all right, listen, guys. I'm going to bug out.
Yeah.
You know, not be the
third
wheel.
Crowd.
See you later on. Good luck. But she, as soon as she turned up, she was like, yeah, you can go now, mate.
I felt really bad, that. But I was like, you've got to take your chance. When you're single, it's every man for himself.
You've obviously, listen, the pair of you were on an equal footing. Both of you knew what was happening. And I was aware. And I was like, I'll have another drink and then I'll go. And then when she bought shots just for you two, I'm like, that's my cue.
I know. I was like, what's that all about? I was like, where's Riches? Unbelievable.
No, that's fine. Do you know what? Strong, powerful woman. She didn't take any shit.
Well, we were chatting at the pub before that we left. We didn't even have a drink in there. And I've noticed this a lot because I DJ a lot. And for the last month, I've been sober. So I've been doing a lot of gigs sober. And you really see how creepy and lechy and pervy guys are.
Like we were
and
talking last
I
night.
I really understand now. I mean, I don't fully understand because I'm not a woman, but I really see and observe and notice how pervy and creepy and shameless guys are with it, and how horrible it really must be for girls who are out either as a pair or a group and just can't really go anywhere without being hit on. And last night was great because I didn't hit on this girl.
No.
In fact, the opposite.
Yeah,
she just
came
in and was like, right, I'm having
she
you.
She just crowbarred you away.
And I was like, cool, all right, this is happening.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's fine because if you're single and it's consensual and you're both on the same page, and a lot of people go out to meet people at the weekend and that's part of that weekend, you know, drinking culture. But when it's unwarranted and unwanted, it's just really horrible to see, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that bar that we were in was just, there was guys at the bar with their arms folded, like not even drinking, just looking at girls on the
just
dance floor like, ugh.
Yeah.
And it makes me as a guy feel a lot of shame for our sex. It's like, you know, just go up to her and talk to her, like have the balls to walk up to a girl if you like her and talk to her. And if she's not interested, hopefully she'll tell you and then you leave her alone.
Exactly. But don't just stand there
creeping on
dribbling.
Her. And I've seen guys as well a lot of the time go up to girls and they're clearly not interested, but they'll just persist and keep hassling them. And it's gross and it grosses me out. So although I am a single, free, you know, man about town, I like to do it in a way that's respectful.
Of course.
And, you know, has an element of old-fashioned sensibility about it. I'm very old-fashioned in my courting, you know.
Courting as well.
I like to have a chaperone with the girl. Not that far.
I get through 20 cokes a week. I keep putting them over puddles.
That doesn't happen anymore, does it?
Of course
it
does. Coats are expensive, man. I'm not putting my coat... Listen, no disrespect to anyone, but I'm not putting my coat on the floor.
No, I probably wouldn't either, to be fair. They used to be the thing as well, didn't they? That guys would always walk on the roadside of the curb to protect from passing traffic.
I know. And this is the thing I'm struggling with at the minute, is that like being on a train or public transport, and then you see a woman gets on, and my instinct is to stand up and give them the seat. And that's out of just the old-fashioned
Not that you think that they're weak and inferior and somehow...
It's just been put into me that that's what
you open
do.
Doors for women and elderly people. Things like that.
Yeah. I mean, and so when I'm on the tube, and this happens a lot now, like people get on and you sat there and you go, right, yeah, well, you know, we're all equal now. I don't have to stand up and give you the seat. But inside, I'm like fighting every urge to go, oh, my God. Because I've done it a couple of times. I have stood up and gone, do you want my seat?
And they've looked at you like, yeah. Well, that's the world we're in now, isn't it? And that's fine. But yeah, I'm doing it from a place of generosity, not a place of...
Exactly. It's not power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, you do get that now, don't you? Like, unless they're pregnant, I never offer up a seat.
Yeah,
so I don't want to get the scorn of some woman who's like thinks I'm disrespecting her by offering her a seat.
And it's very difficult when that's happened. So you can't sit back down; you have to walk off.
Yeah,
so
of course.
So then some other dude jumps in.
Yeah,
your seat.
Yeah.
Or you're on a packed train; you literally have to just sort of stand there.
And
you
got about nine stops.
Push yourself out.
Yeah. Like, why did I give that up? It's funny,
oh,
man.
Oh God!
I was doing a podcast with someone. I can't remember who it was, and he was saying to me that he opened a door for an old guy. I think it was in San Francisco. He was on tour, and he said that the old guy just burst into tears because he's like, nobody does that for me anymore. Like, you're the first person, first stranger that showed me kindness in about 15 years. Oh. And he said this guy just broke down and started crying.
Holy shit, man.
Heartbreaking.
What fucking world does he live in? That's amazing.
Well, a very cruel and unforgiving one, it seems.
Shit, man. Then see, I can't handle things like that.
It breaks your heart,
doesn't
it? It
breaks my heart, man. I was watching something earlier on YouTube, and it... You know, like, it's like you're watching a video and then something else pops up and goes, oh, you might want to watch this one. And it was, I can't remember what it was, but it was, I was like, I can't watch this. This is too much.
Yeah.
I know the world is hard. I don't want to see it. Oh, God.
So you're a sensitive soul like me
too
then, Rich.
Sensitive. I feel like I'm getting,
The older you get, the softer you get.
Yeah. Because I used to be, I've always been sensitive, but not overly. Like, I could kind of shut things out. And I think since having counselling and since trying to sort my shit out and be less of a dick, I seem to have tapped into something.
A well that
I can't,
should never have been
opened.
Yeah,
like, oh yeah. God, I've got this like holes in the dam now that I'm trying to plug with my fingers. I've got enough fingers and now I'm just, everything just breaks my heart.
It must be hard for someone like yourself as well. You touched on this in your routine last night, which was fantastic, by the way.
Thanks,
it was
man.
A pleasure.
I appreciate that.
Pleasure watching you work the
busted
room like
my
a master.
Ass
you were great,
like,
man. Everybody loved you by the end of it.
By the end,
everybody
they were stone cold at the top.
They were. They were. Really stone cold.
I haven't experienced that for a long time where you walk out to a room and go, how are you doing? And the whole room
just
stares.
Stone faces on the front row.
Man.
Well, it's Birmingham, honestly. If anybody listening to this is from Birmingham, please don't take offence because I've lived here my whole life, so I feel like I'm in a position to comment. And every tour that I do, the sales are always the lowest in Birmingham.
Really?
And the crowds are always just the most nonchalant, like, right. Impress me, motherfucker.
Right.
And it's almost like they don't even want to get into the mood of it and the spirit of it. It's like, well, why pay to go out and experience this live entertainment, whether it's comedy or music or whatever it is, and then refuse to give yourself into the momentum of the moment and lose yourself in the whole vibe of it. And Birmingham is one of the worst places in all of the UK for that.
Right. Do you know why there's not been like, well, we talked last night.
Yes.
About there's not been a cultural explosion out of Birmingham. Like, you have movements like Manchester, Liverpool, London, or wherever, you know.
Yeah.
There hasn't really been anything. Birmingham.
Dude, every band that plays here, and I go to a lot of rock and metal shows because that's my sort of world, but every band that plays here is like, Birmingham, the home of heavy metal, Black Sabbath. And you're like, yeah, that's great, but they formed 50 years ago. And we've been dining out on that for half a century now. And Duran Duran were from Birmingham, but they never make any mention of it.
Yeah, they lost their accents pretty quickly.
Of course they did.
Well.
You know,
they're
like, we're on a boat in fucking Rio. Like, we don't want to know about Birmingham. And then you obviously had the two-tone movement in Coventry, but again, that's 40 years ago now.
That's right,
you had Ocean Colour Scene in the 90s, but in the last 20 years, the Streets, but even Mike Skinner, unless you know he's a Brummie, you would think, oh, that's a London band.
That's right.
Do you know what I mean?
Because he talks about, well, yeah.
Yeah, you get me, fam, like, he very much talks
about
like
Bounds
that.
Green, and he's talking about, oh, right, okay, yeah.
So there's really been nothing that's rejuvenised the city in a way that something like the Hacienda did for Manchester, or even like Sheffield with that brilliant electro movement in
that's
the
80s. Right, man.
It's culturally very lacking. And the one thing that it does have at the moment, which is cool, is Peaky Blinders.
Yes.
And that sort of made Birmingham cool again.
Yeah.
But that's obviously set a couple hundred years ago. Do you know what I mean? So it's like we still need something new and current
there
and
needs
fresh.
To be, we need to sort of try to dig into... Like, even Bristol's had a...
Bristol's an amazing city.
Yeah, man.
The crowd's there. I'm sure it's the same for comedy. It's always one of the best cities I play when I'm on a DJ
absolutely
tour.
Brilliant. My eldest son's just moved to Bristol.
It's one of my favourite cities in the UK, man.
And my missus is from there, Jade.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, man.
Oh, right on.
I think I mentioned her on every one of these.
Well, she's your better half.
Keeping her in.
I was going to ask you, though, about... You were talking about sensitivity a moment ago.
Yeah, yeah, go on.
know this is your podcast, so I'm not
interviewing you. No, man, this is what I know, because you do your own podcast. It's going to be interviewing each other.
I'm throwing it back. But, you know, you're obviously from a culture, and you mentioned it last night in your routine, where you're friends of a lot of tough guys, and you obviously look like a bloke, a geezer, you know what I mean? So I guess there's an assumption when people meet you, if they don't know you, that you're like a hard man, tough guy.
Yeah.
So do you find that that's a bit of a struggle?
They make certain assumptions. I've talked about this before. Where they assume the first question I'm always asked, "What's your football team?"
Right. Yeah. Because they just assume that you're. Are you?
Do you want a fag? What's your team? That's the two questions I always get. And when I go, I don't smoke. I don't see the point. And blah 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 blah. And then I go, I don't follow football.
And they're like,
I find it grotesque. Yeah. Like what? I go, I don't see the point in it. And then they go, yeah, but.
What are you into? What do you That's do? Always the question. Like, well, what do you like? You're like, art,
like everything
music.
Everything else, mate.
Yeah.
Everything. So much stuff. And when I was growing up, I tried with the football, but I went more into the music side of stuff. And I was obsessed with vinyl and going to see bands and I used to get such a buzz going to see like the Wonder stuff and people like that.
Well, they're actually playing in Birmingham tonight.
It's
populated itself. I think the Wonder stuff, and maybe one of the guys from Ned's is doing a DJ set.
Right, Stourbridge,
and it's called
Massive.
Love from Stourbridge Tour.
Yeah, right.
It's a package bill. They're playing in Digbeth tonight.
Fuck!
It's a shame you got a gig. I already got you in. That's you know where the pub we were in last night.
Yeah.
The venue where they're playing is directly opposite that.
Oh shit!
Yeah.
So that's called Digbeth, is it?
That's Digbeth. Yeah, that's the only area of Birmingham that has a slight artsy, cultural alternative.
See, I've not known that in the 15 years I've been coming to Birmingham.
And that's where that Cow Vintage Shop is that you spotted last night
First time I came, and I've been looking for that for ages.
And not hard enough, obviously.
No, I'm like, it's got to be here. Yeah. Maybe it closed down.
Because there's an area in there called the Custard Factory, and that used to be a very famous like rave hub.
Yeah.
And there was a pool in the middle of it, and the whole complex would just get taken over with a night called Flashback, which is like drum and bass. That was never my scene growing up, but it was very much a part of the culture at that time, because drum and bass alongside punk and nu metal and those things was culturally prevalent everywhere.
And
you know, that was the ecstasy generation.
I
was a lot more alcohol and guitar music.
That
was my vibe growing up.
It's a sensitivity, and this is why when people listen to this podcast and they hear me talking about crying and things like that, and someone that sounds like me sounds like a mechanic. I sound like a racist.
Well, you obviously know your stuff about cars as well, because that guy in the front row last night said his job, and I've got no idea what that job
was,
but you were straight in there.
Yeah,
motors, yeah.
Well, that's how I hang on to my man card. Is the car? I love cars.
Okay, so that's the one card you can play.
Yeah. I can do that. I don't even know how they work. I don't care. I like the sound of a classic car. I like a big V8. I like the look of them. So aesthetically, brilliant. But I couldn't sit here and have a chat with you about pistons and...
Right, right. Well, I don't even drive. I don't have a license.
Do you not?
No. I took one test.
Pussy.
I know, right? I'm a bloke, are you? I took one test, failed, and then went to university, and then my theory ran out. And I just thought, you know what? I don't need a car. I don't want to contribute more to world pollution. And I'm not having to go at anyone driving. You know, obviously, people need cars to get around. But I have just always been in a fortunate position where I've lived in places that have great public transport.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, in 20 minutes, I can be in Birmingham City Centre from my village. My village, Dorridge, goes direct to London. Obviously, I'm moving back to London in a couple of weeks. The last thing you want in London is a car.
Oh, God. honestly, I dread driving into London. I had to do it the other day because Jay needed to be in there and transport was fucked. And you can't just nip in. You can't nip in because you'll get trapped. It's a fucking nightmare. So yeah, you did the right thing. You did the right thing. What about you? I mean, would you consider yourself to be, you're sort of emotionally,
plugged in?
Yeah,
very much so. I talk about this when I'm a guest on other podcasts a lot, so apologies if people have heard me on others and I'm going over old ground. But my mum has bipolar and has had it for the majority of her life. She comes from a family that it runs in, and her auntie had it, and her grandma had it, and her grandma sadly killed herself, hung herself.
Shit, man.
And my mum's father, my granddad, found her hanging in the barn in the farm that they lived on when he was 5 years old.
Oh, my God.
So it's a disease that's very much in my mum's side of the family. And my mum was well up until the age of about 25, I want to say.
Yeah.
I think she was always quite vulnerable and delicate.
Yeah.
As often people who have mental illness are, they're just a bit more vulnerable to the cruelty of the world, you know? They can't bounce back from things as easily.
Yeah.
And a similar sort of thing happened to my mum around then. So I was around four at the time. And my mum was pregnant with another child, and it was a girl, and her name was Julia. And she was born with really bad health complications. So after about a month, she passed away. She died.
Wow.
And I'm a little bit too young to really... I remember the day that she was born, but thankfully, I must have just blocked it out because it's traumatic, but I don't remember the funeral. But you've got to imagine how horrible and heartbreaking it must have been for my parents to have buried, you know, like a 1-month-old child in a tiny little casket.
Oh, dude,
it's worse than a miscarriage or a stillborn because they come into this world alive and you know, you're excited for this new addition to the family, but then it's snatched from you.
Well, I used to work in a funeral director's, one of the many jobs that I've had, and what blew me away was you have to go in and collect the body of an unborn baby it didn't matter how small they were, the level of respect that was there. Like, we'd go in and the funeral director would be with you, and he'd take off his hat and he'd bow, and I'd stand by the door. And you go in, and then the doctor, they say a few words over, you know. Sometimes it was as big as an envelope, just this tiny creature.
Yeah.
And then they say a few words, and then they bow, and then they take it, and then they come over to you, and they put it in a box that you've got, that you're holding. And it's in, like, it looks like a toolbox sort of thing, so other people on the outside can't see what you're doing. And then you go out, and then it's the whole thing. There's a proper ceremony, and there's a proper send off, and it's beautiful. It's tragic, but it's beautiful because of the level of respect.
Yeah.
And I saw that. I remember being at a funeral, and it was a tiny, tiny coffin of a baby, and absolutely broke me in two. You know, so
you can't imagine it.
And that's someone I don't even know.
Yeah.
So to
be
someone that you're connected to must have been so traumatic.
Yeah, I mean, well, that was the beginning of the end of my parents' relationship, for sure, because they were unable to grieve together. And my mum, from as long as I can remember, for many, many, many years, thankfully, touch wood, she's been well now for about 8 years.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is because, what do women call it when they're...
Well, the menopause.
Yeah. So I think now, because of that, that's a large part of it, because whenever she would have breakdowns, I think they'd be very much in time with her cycle, because obviously it's all connected, isn't
it?
And it's that memory of this lost life. And so I'd say 3 or 4 times a year, every year, for my whole childhood, teenage, young adult life, she was in institutions and psychiatric wards for a few weeks at a time, just because it got to the point where she'd be off on absolute flights of mania and would just get in the car and drive and be gone. And this is before mobiles. So she'd be out there in the world, and the level of worry and anxiety that we'd feel because we didn't know whether she was going to come back alive. Do you know what I mean? We didn't know whether she was going to do something to herself on purpose or by accident. And obviously when people are in that much of a removed from reality frame of mind, the last thing they should be doing is operating a vehicle. So we'd have to just section her for her own safety and protection. And so that was my life. My whole life was, you know, every few months for a couple of weeks at a time, visiting my mum in these wards that, you know, it wasn't a private ward, it was a public one. So it was filled with some pretty sketchy people, you know, not to disrespect any of them because they were all obviously unwell as well, but like dangerous people and frightening people for a young mind to deal with and to confront, you know. And I'd see my mum in with these people and be like, well, that's my mum, you know, this is this kind, caring, sweet.
Yeah. She shouldn't be here with these people.
She shouldn't be here with these people, but then they've obviously got their story too. And so I've always been exposed to the harsh reality of life, and that's not made me bitter or cynical at all. In fact, the opposite. It's made me full of hope and positivity and love and kindness. But yeah, I'd certainly say that I'm a delicate flower.
I think that's what, you either find a way to deal with what's gone on and rise above and use that power for good, for want of a better phrase, or other people that aren't. It just depends on how you are as a human being inside, isn't it? Some people, it will just crush them.
Yep.
And they'll never get past it, and they'll just be depressed forever, and they'll see no point in existing. You go, well, life's fucked. My mum couldn't even cope, so why? What chance do I have? Whereas it shows strength of character in you that you've gone, no, I can see the beauty in the world. We're all walking, we're all hanging by a thread, really. And
we're all on the edge.
Yeah.
And that's fine. I think as long as you accept and acknowledge that, that's the first step towards coping with it and dealing with it. And I went through a phase, I mentioned this briefly downstairs, so I'll tell you like the full story. Yeah. So I was working on Kerrang Radio in Birmingham. I was 23 to 27. So my mid-20s was, you know, the greatest you could ever imagine. I was on this amazing radio station with over a million listeners a year. I was interviewing my heroes on a daily basis.
That's an incredible
From
guests,
Slash to Nikki Sixx, Ozzy Osbourne, Alice Cooper. The list is endless. All of them, almost everybody that I would have ever wanted to have interviewed, I have and did then, 10 years ago. And it was the dream gig. But what happened was, and this has been a trend in the last few years, particularly with the rock music press, is rock is not a popular or dominant cultural art form at the moment. You know, it's all urban music, grime, hip-hop, and pop. And the last, I think, great guitar period was probably in the mid-noughties with the likes of The Hives, The Strokes, The White Stripes, Arctic Monkeys a little bit later on, and Kasabian.
Well, Arctic Monkeys were sort of like the tail end of it, weren't they?
They were the tail end of it. And them and Kasabian are probably the last two British big guitar bands. You can't think Royal Blood to some extent, but they're nowhere near as iconic.
That whole there's a whole those like Idols and things like that, those bands, but they kind of seem isolated. There's no sort of
there's no collective. Like then there'd be four or five bands of a similar thing at a time,
and then the pressure would get behind
and it was
it.
Wave after wave after wave. You'd have grunge, and then it was punk, and then it was new metal, and then it was the garage rock revival, and then kind of nothing. And so the money's going out of that industry. And what happened with Kerrang is obviously it's a commercial radio station, so it's based entirely on advertisement, and that's what they need to exist. But nobody would want to invest in it because they're like, oh, we'd sooner give our money to Kiss or Capital or these stations that are playing popular music that are in the charts that people are actually listening to, and it's, you know, prevalent within the culture of the here and the now. And Kerrang was always seen as a bit of an unfashionable throwback, you know, cash hole. Like they don't just want to throw their money in there and see no return. So the station closed down. It still exists, it's an online station still, but the station in Birmingham closed down. It came off FM. They let a load of people go. I was one of the people to let go. I guess it was like last in first out kind of a scenario, because I was very much the new kid there. So I went from being the host of the evening show. That was the other thing. It was my first job in the industry. My first job in radio was hosting the evening show Kerrang Radio to like 180,000 listeners a week.
Wow, man, prestigious.
And every night I'd be going out, like this hotel, I've partied in here with the raconteurs, with Deftones, like because the Academy is right around the corner. So my life was like, I'd do the show, then after the show I'd go down to a gig, catch the last half an hour, take the band out, be in bars like the one we were in last night with the band, showing them the town. You know, girls, like I was single, so I was living the proper Jack the Lad, like great lifestyle. And then the station closes and it's taken from me. And I wasn't prepared, because it came from out of nowhere.
And it was sudden as well.
It was sudden, and it was basically the most crushing and brutal thing. And at the time, it seemed like my life was over. What it seemed like, I was 27 and I got this idea into my head. I was like, fine, maybe I'm just meant to be part of that 27 club. And I had this stupid romantic image that I was just going to go out, because I couldn't face life. Everywhere I went in Birmingham, the question I would get from everyone is, so what are you up to now? And my answer was, well, nothing. I've got nothing going on. And you'd sort of see people go, oh, right. Just, and I saw a change. People would treat me differently because I'm now no longer on the station. Exactly. And you see the gross side of the entertainment industry then for what it is. And it was a harsh lesson to learn.
Brutal. How did you...
I felt like a ghost in my own life was what it felt like. Everywhere I went, that's the guy that used to be on Kerrang. Oh, that's what I'd hear people say.
You're still young. And
I'm 27. And I feel like my life's over. And everybody else that I was on the station with had wives, partners, they kept their jobs, or they had something else to go into. So everybody else had something or someone. I didn't. And none of my friends, and this is no disrespect to any of them, but none of them could understand what I was going through, because you just can't until you've been in it. Like with anything in life, until you've experienced something or something similar yourself, you really don't know what it feels like. So I basically spent every day for about 9 months drunk, out of my mind, on drugs, booze, everything.
Just numbing
the pain,
out.
Blocking it out completely. And I was severely, chronically depressed. And I was drinking to kill myself, to die. I didn't want to live.
Really? You were just...
And I wasn't going to commit suicide in a moment, in an act, but I wanted to die. So I was going for the slow, drawn-out approach. And then one night, I was in a bar till about 6 a.m. Actually, I'd been on tour with a band, and I'd come off that tour. And that was like the first snapshot of a continuation in that industry, and hope was almost restored. But then the second I got back to Birmingham, it was, you know, just sucked out of me again. So I was in this bar till about 6 a.m. and I was so broke at the time, although I, as all alcoholics, somehow always find money for drink, isn't it? And so I always had money for booze, but I didn't have money for a taxi home. So I thought, I'm going to wait till the first train. So I went to the station in Birmingham, Snow Hill, just over there. And the station was closed because it was about 6 and it was a Sunday. So it wasn't open till 7, right? And I don't clearly remember exactly what happened because I was blackout drunk, but I decided I was going to climb over the fence and break into the station and just sleep like on a bench on the platform until the first train. This is what a fucking car crash I was at the time. And my coat got caught on a spike on the top of the fence and I fell down. Basically, the fence is about as high as the ceiling of the room that we're in.
Holy shit, like 10 feet. Yeah, 10
so
feet
not insanely high, but enough. I landed on my back on the tracks of the train track, like on the actual tracks, smash on my back and like passed out and woke up. I didn't know whether it was a minute later, an hour later. So I'm on the tracks and I'm like, fuck, is there going to be a train coming? So I go to get up, but I can't stand up because I've broken, I don't know this at the time, but I've broken like 5 ribs, fractured my spine in 3 places.
Oh my God.
I can't stand up. I can't get up. So I'm trying to force myself up with my hands. I then break my wrist doing that.
Jesus.
So I'm just on these tracks, like trying to snake my body off and I'm screaming for help.
Yeah.
And thank whoever, somebody was opening the station at this time and he heard my cries.
Wow.
So he came down and he was like, oh my God, what on earth are you, like, what are you doing down there? Yeah. I was like, I can't get up. I've injured myself. Please get an ambulance. Please like cancel the trains. And then again, I sort of passed out and I came to and I was being carried off the tracks in a stretcher. Thank whoever. I got off and, you know, wasn't sawn in half by an incoming train.
Bloody hell, mate.
So they take me to A&E and I get x-rayed and all of that. And again, all of this is a little bit blurry because I was still absolutely fucked up. But they discharged me.
What?
They did a full x-ray and they would have seen all the damage because it was there.
Yeah.
But it was one guy. And this is the problem with the healthcare system in the UK. You know, the NHS is fantastic.
Yes.
And, you know, it's one of the best things that we have as a country. But it's also severely underfunded, understaffed. And there was one guy on his own at the end of a night shift and he was basically exhausted and he missed, he just missed it. He missed, I don't know how, but he missed it and he discharged me. And I'm like, dude, I know something's wrong with me. I can feel it. So I had to walk out of there. So I walk out of hospital with a broken back.
What?
I get in a cab and this is the great irony. You have to see the comedy in it. I then have to get a cab home and pay for this cab home.
Oh, shit.
Which if I'd have just done in the first place, I'd have never broken my fucking back.
Oh my God.
Cruel irony. So I call my mum and I'm like, mum, I'm in a really bad way. I don't want to like worry you, but I'm just, I've got to tell you I'm coming home and I'm in a really bad way. So can you and dad get round? And they were divorced for many, many years at this point, but they still spend a lot of time together.
Yeah.
And so I get to the house and I just, this was the moment I knew I was in a really bad way. I saw their reaction to me, their face when they saw me was one of absolute distress. And so they get a doctor around and they're like, let's get a second opinion. So a doctor comes around and does a check and she's like, he seems fine. If he's still feeling weird in a day, take him back to the hospital. So, and then my sister's home as well because it's Christmas time. It's December 15th. So I'm in bed, in a double bed with my sister, watching actually Sons of Anarchy. Yeah. Spoiler alert, the episode where Gemma kills Tara. So this gnarly episode, my sister's never seen the show before and she's like, what the fuck? And what happened was, right, my ribs had cracked and punctured my lung. So although all my spine was fucked, the worst thing was that my broken ribs had punctured my lung and I was drowning in my own blood. But obviously nobody knew it because you can't see it happening. So my sister basically called mum and dad and she was like, Matt's dying. Like he seems like he's, and I was actually dying because I was drowning and I was like hours away apparently. So again, I sort of come to and I'm being carried out of the house in a stretcher, in an ambulance. And I get to another hospital. We go to a different one. I was like, I'm not going back
No.
I won't say the hospital, but I went to a different one. And there's this German guy there and he's got big hands like yours. And he basically cuts my side open. He's in there with these massive hands and I'm screaming like, fuck.
Yeah,
and in a classic German way, he's like, you must not swear. I'm like, so there's me just suffering in silence.
This is the moment that swearing was invented.
Gonna, if ever there's a time that swearing is allowed, it's got to be now. When you're ripping me open and he puts this tube in so it can drain the blood, and then they take me to a third hospital, which is a spinal specialist ward, the QE, Queen Elizabeth, and then that's where they figured out you've got 3 spinal fractures.
Jesus.
The option is either we cut your entire back open down the middle, open it up and then put some scaffolding in to rebuild, or we allow you to let the body to heal conservatively, which basically means you'll just have to lie flat on your back in bed for 3 months. And we got a few different opinions and I was like, I don't want 3 months in bed. I want the operation. And my parents were like, we'll go with what you want. And then on the day, and you have to go nil by mouth before a big operation, so yeah. No food's allowed. So I'm there in bed, tube coming out of me, just in the worst state you can imagine. My body's in bits. Mm. I'm not allowed to eat because of this operation. And then they cancel the operation. They pull out because they're afraid and they're not right. confident enough. And that obviously introduces the element of doubt big time. So we said, all right, we're not going to have the operation. If you're not confident enough, then that raises some alarms. So in the end, I did the conservative treatment. So I spent 3 months on my back. I had to obviously ring a bell every time I needed to take a wee or have a poo and get a nurse to come and help me do it. And the other thing was I didn't actually take a shit for 15 days because either of the shock had sent my organs into shutdown mode or I was on so much morphine, it's a constipator. So my tummy was a fucking drum.
Just a bag of shit inside
It was the worst. And so, I spent, long story short, 3 months in bed. Thankfully, I had visitors almost every day. But the long sort of moral of the story is that it made me so aware of the fragility of life and how special and important being able to walk and go to the bathroom on your own. Like, you have no ego left.
No.
And I came out of it almost like it was a spiritual rebirth because I thought I almost threw away my life over a job. Mm. Ultimately, that's what it was. It was my lifestyle around it and the...
It was everything, wasn't it?
The snatch that crushed me. But ultimately, I fucked my life up or almost took my own life because of a job. Mm. And then I realized no job is worth that. Nothing is that important. Friends, family, and health are all that we have in this world that really matters. And it taught me that. It taught me that lesson in such a profound way that everything that's happened to me since, and there's been some hard times since, and I have... You know, dark days, of course, like everyone. But anything that's happened to me, I'm like, I came out of that. I can walk. Yeah. And the look on my mum, dad, and sister's faces through that whole period, I saw the pain that I caused them. Mm. And I just thought, if I'd have taken my life, it would have ruined theirs. Yeah. And I'm not having a go at anybody who takes their own life because obviously, if you can't carry on, I understand, but it's a very selfish decision because there's going to be repercussions. Unless you're just on your own in this world and there's no one, then I can understand. But if you have a family or friends, that's going to ruin their life. And so that taught me that lesson as well. And so really, although it sucked and it fucking hurt, it was the best thing that's ever happened in my entire life.
Wow, man. And it just goes to show that you didn't really want to kill yourself after all that. You were just...
Life's too precious.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This show is made by Dark Horse Digital. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.
Comedy got me through some of the really shit times in hospital. Yeah, right. Like, you have to laugh at the fact. Like, a very quick story that I'll tell real quick is because I couldn't open my bowels for 14 days for whatever reason.
Dude, you must have been so much pain.
I was having enemas, I was having laxatives, and none of it was working, right?
You fantasized about putting a spoon up there.
It was Boxing Day that I finally did it. And I remember I was like, all I want for Christmas this year is to shit. And when you go through that for a thought process, you realise that any other wants or material things that you fucking obsess over, like, if your greatest hope in life is that you fucking take a dump on Christmas Day, then, you know, you see the absurdity of it all. And this is, I'm sure that my sister, if she's listening to this, will not appreciate this story being told, but this is what happened. after 2 weeks, Christmas came and went and no Christmas miracle for Matt. So I was like, I've got to take matters into my own hands. So I go, guys, close the curtains around the bed. Helena, my sister, you'll look out. Mum, dad, this is what I need you to do. We're going to deliver this shit like a baby. And I got my mum and dad to get a leg each and lift it up, not so high that it caused like any trauma on the back, because obviously I had to keep the back flat. But lifting my legs up in the air, spread them apart, so that's their view. It's some kind of fucked up reverse circle of life.
Oh,
and
my God.
Because that's the thing is, you know, when you open your body in that way, that's why pregnant people open their legs. Yeah. And, you know, you don't just have your legs like slightly open. They're wide open.
Wide.
And honestly, my mum was like, it's coming. It's coming. Keep pushing. Keep pushing. I can see its head. And honestly, dude, this river of shit came flooding out of me. 2 weeks worth of backlog, food, poison.
Like a busted sewer pipe.
And it was wicked. And she's like, it's still going. It's still going. And my sister's there like,
deflating.
I was. Because my stomach was like a fucking drum. It was up here. And then it just started going down and down. And the whole bed was just a river of shit. And I was like, right, ring, had to ring the bell.
Oh my God.
And the nurse, bless her, like, and I have to give the biggest shout out to all nurses and paramedics and people who work in that field, because the stuff they have to do for such crap pay is so admirable. And she was like, yes, you've done it, you've opened your bells. It was like a ward party.
Is there not a bell for that, like when you cure cancer?
Yeah. ding ding ding. And so that, and you know, I look back and I laugh, and we all as a family laugh about that to this day. And it's those moments that, you know, comedy, and you know, we can talk about what you do, it allows you to see the absurdity in life.
Yeah, but then that shows again who you are as a person, how you deal with like all manner of shit like that. And from the sound of it, you seem to have coped brilliantly with some fucking horrendous stuff. And you, what is it you said to me yesterday? Did you say you're quite OCD?
Yeah, not to a point where I have to, like, you know, open and close. Like, dating my friend from Dirty Sanchez is really OCD. And, you know, that's
debilitating.
It is. Yeah. And a lot of people struggle. Like, day-to-day life must be a struggle for people with real OCD. So I don't want to claim that I've got, like, the, you know, the extreme form.
Well, you're more, like you said,
I just like everything to be in order.
Yeah, so if we
neat
go, like
and tidy
you said,
and just so.
If we go off on tangents in conversation, this is what you pointed out to me. We have to come back to what we were talking about.
Yes.
Otherwise, you lose your shit.
Yeah.
You're like, no, we were talking about blah, blah. And I've not, and it's brilliant because you go, anyway, we were talking about. And you go,
yeah.
And that must have been really good for you as an interviewer on your show.
What, the accident and that experience, or the OCD?
No, the OCD, like being able to remember where you, what you were talking about.
Keep it on
and come
track.
Back to it.
Yeah.
That must have been a great skill.
Well, and the accident, actually. So before then, interviewing was always my favourite part about broadcasting. Like, I always was a fairly competent presenter, but I was always a lot better when I had somebody in the room with me bouncing off them, whether that was a co-host or it was an interview scenario. And so that was always the area of the medium that I was the most in love with. Mm. And so after Kerrang, and so after the accident, right, I was in like a body brace, and I, after 3 months or so, like, came home and I was in this brace for a while, and I was like, you know what, fuck it, I need a job. I'm getting back in the industry. I'm getting back in the game. So I got myself an interview with Classic Rock magazine. And at the time, they had a radio station as well called Team Rock Radio. And I went down to London on the train because it was important for me to face that fear. You know, I didn't want to then be afraid to ever get a train again because of what had happened. So I go and I get...
Did you go through the gate this time?
Like, it was a different station. So yeah, there was none of that.
Have you been back there?
I've been back there. I didn't go back there for a long time because it was a place that had a lot of heaviness surrounding
it.
So I actually went back there a year to the day. I consciously waited and went back a year to the day and had half an hour just sat on the platform and, you know, just thinking about
and
everything
that
happened.
And that time would have built up so much weight would have been put on...
Yeah, completely. It was like a cloud hanging over me for a long time, and I wanted to leave it exactly a year again. It's that OCD thing. I'm like, exactly a year. And so, yeah, so I got the train to London in my body brace, navigated my way around the tubes, went for this interview. I was only like a week out of hospital at this point, and got a job presenting on Team Rock. So straight back in the game. Moved to London. I was like, I'm having it. Not only did I have a whole newfound lust for life, but I was like, I'm motivated now to not be a self-pitying, wallowing sap. And I'm just going to get out there and I'm going to get shit done and I'm going to get back in the game. And so I started doing a show on there called Soundtrack Apocalypse. And the format of that was basically Desert Island Discs, but a sort of rock take on it. Okay. So instead of going onto a nice island, the world's going to end because of a zombie apocalypse or nuclear holocaust or whatever, and you have to come and live out the rest of your days below ground in a bunker, and with you, you get to bring five songs as the soundtrack to End of Days. Yeah. And then that would form a larger in-depth discussion about everything, the guest life and career. And that was where I really started to develop and hone my interview chops.
Yeah.
And then when that station closed down, so that station closed as well, and I lost my job there after a year. But that time I was like,
You know what?
I'm like, I'm not going to get hung up on a job ever again, so fuck it. And then I just went freelance and have been completely self-employed since then, so about 3 years now.
Wow.
But that's really where I cultivated the skills to sit down and connect with people. And the accident and all the stuff, and obviously you have that as your specific topic with this podcast.
Mm.
But I find that being somebody who's experienced a lot of that stuff, pain, heartache, you can talk to people a lot more openly about the good and the bad. And so you get a lot more out of people than just, how's the tour?
Of course, yeah, right.
Tell me about the new album. Yeah, the same old shit that people get asked when they're on those press schedule, like promotional
Let's sell our new products.
Right, and I never talk about the new album. If it's great, I will. But, you know, I want to talk about their life, the journey so far. And so all my guests really have to be of a certain age and have to have been in the game for a certain amount of time because, you know, I'm talking to them for an hour. So if it's a, you know, brand new band with two songs out, they're not going to have an hour's worth of stories unless they've had quite an exceptional life outside of that. And so, yeah, that's why the podcast is called Life in the Stocks, because it's me, Matt Stocks, chatting to people about life.
But it's excellent. And the guests you've had are incredible. You know, Johnny Rotten, man. That
was a coup.
My God. Because he doesn't do things like that, does he?
He doesn't do a lot of interviews, no. And he certainly doesn't do a lot of, like, independent, underground podcasts, certainly not. And I've got to say a huge thank you to my friend Tony Cook for that one. He called me one day and he's like proper, like, affable, friendly, big northern guy. Actually, he's lost quite a lot of weight in the last few years, but he used to be really rotund and just like a big jolly fat guy, right? And he's like, hey Matt, how'd you fancy an interview with John Lydon? And I was like, does the Pope fuck kids? Hell yeah. And so he hooked me up and he got me. I was like, I'll get you 45 minutes. I can't get you an hour, but I'll get you 45 minutes. You'll be the last interview of the day. It's at his hotel room in Chelsea. And if you've heard it, if anyone listening to this has heard it, if you haven't, check it out. But I start recording from the moment I walk in his hotel room.
Yeah.
And it's him there and he's like, I'm John. He's Rambo. And he's like just in character. He's got an orange jumpsuit on. So he looks like a fucking prison inmate. He's smashed. He's clearly wasted. There's empty Corona bottles everywhere.
Yeah.
And we go out on the balcony. We do out there. And we're just chain smoking. I bummed a few cigarettes off him over the course of the chat. And I think that's what endeared me to him. He was like, oh, this guy's all right. You know, he's not one of them. And I got one of the best interviews, I think, out of him that I've ever heard. And I say that without arrogance, like objectively. Just he showed his sensitive side, his intelligent side, his vulnerable sides. And I humanized him. And that's what I always try and do. Gene Simmons is another person who has a certain reputation, like John. He's an easy target for a lot of like the PC police that say, well, he said this, I hate that cunt. It's like, well, no, a lot of the time they're in character and that's a defense for them.
Yeah.
And it's easier than showing their true selves. And people misconstrue their words and they take them out of context. And so I'm like, I want to get to the heart of who these people are. And that's always my goal. And with John and Gene, I really humanized both of them and got really quite profound chats out of them. And they showed that there's so much more than what people see in the media, you know, the character.
Yeah.
And so that's always the goal. But yeah, John was episode 10, so it was pretty early on. I've just put out episode 100, so I've finished season one. But that was episode 10, and he was my dream guest. He was literally my dream guest.
Where'd you go after that?
Exactly. I was like, for fuck's sake, how am I going to top that? So Iggy Pop is the new dream guest.
Wow, man.
And I'm very much a believer in like manifesting your hopes, right? So if you say them out loud, then they come true.
Dude, I tell you what, though, since doing this podcast, people, because they can see what you're doing...
Well, it all materialises, doesn't it? Snowballs.
Go, oh, yeah, go on then, I'll do that. Yeah.
Well, John opened the door to Sean Ryder, to Alan McGee, to Steve Diggle from Buzzcocks, because he is, as you say, a guy who doesn't do a lot of that. Yeah. He doesn't fuck with people unless he really wants to, unless he's interested or impressed. And as soon as I did Sean, we're chatting, and Sean's like, Sean Ryder from Happy Mondays, he's like, the only reason I did Celebrity, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of the Jungle, is because John Lydon did it.
Yeah, right.
If it's good enough for John, it's good enough
there
for me.
Go.
That's why I'm doing this podcast. And he said that in the interview.
Wow, man.
And he very kindly, you know those shortlist interviews where it's 5 minutes with and people say their favourite book, film, podcast? Sean Ryder did one of them and he said in it, favourite podcast, Life in the Stocks.
Amazing.
Matt's a great interviewer. I listened to the John Lydon one. I liked it so much. I agreed to do it.
Perfect.
And then we ended up doing a live Q&A in Manchester, me and Sean. And we've, you know,
I saw that.
Developed a bit of a relationship. And
oh, he's a mate. Sean Ryder is, I nearly did a show in Edinburgh a few years back called Sean Ryder Saved My Life.
Right.
Because in the 80s, I've said this to someone else before, the music that my dad had, I was always very lucky to have the Stones and Dylan and shit like that, and we'll probably talk about this on yours.
Fuck yeah.
But Sean Ryder was someone that just changed everything for me, changed my life. So I've got him, he's up there for me. He's like, you know, he's the boy, you know, and what I like about him is that he doesn't fuck about. Like Lydon, like the people that we like, they don't, if you manage to get a chat with them, it's because they've gone, all right, yeah, you're not a fucking
idiot.
You're legit. Yeah, you're not an idiot. And that, to me, is...
Well, it was great, because after John was Steve Diggle and Sean Ryder, and then Sean was like, oh, you should chat to Alan for this. I was like, would he do it? He's like, yeah, Alan would do it. So then through Sean, I got Alan.
Wow.
And then I was hoping that through Alan, I'd manage to get one of the Gallagher brothers.
Oh, yeah. Alan McGee, we're talking about.
But he's not so much in touch with them anymore, so that hasn't yet happened. But Liam would be another dream guest. Not so much Noel. I've interviewed Noel before, and he was a spiky little bastard, as you'd imagine he would be.
Yeah,
but I imagine he looked at me and was like, this 24-year-old for Kerrang. You know, it's not really on the level of where he's at. But Liam, I was sat in the Kerrang studios one day. He came in to do an interview with one of my colleagues, and I just had my headphones on, head down, and was just editing an interview or something at my desk. And I feel this tap on my shoulder, and I turn around, and it's Liam, and he's right there in my face.
Wow.
He's like, that's a fucking nice jumper, that is, mate. Where'd you get that? Where'd you get that jumper, man? And I was like, oh, this is just a little top man number, Liam. He's like, nice one, man, nice one. So he goes into the studio and does the interview. And then my boss comes and sits down next to me, and he's doing a bit of work on his computer because his desk was next to mine. About half an hour later, Liam comes out of the interview and he comes back over to me and he's like, all right, mate, good to see you. Yeah, take care. All right, you know, take it easy. Wow. My boss is like, what the fuck's going on there? I was like, oh, it's just, oh, kid, mate, like that.
Yeah, just
thick as thieves, thick as thieves. And I love Liam. I think it's actually Noel who said it. He's like, the difference between them is Liam is a dog and he's a cat.
Yeah.
And that's very much a metaphor for their personalities. Liam is a lot more just boundless energy, friendly.
Yeah,
what you see is what you get. Noel's a bit more sly. He's a bit more standoffish.
Yeah,
but he's obviously the older brother, and I guess he had to be the protector, didn't he, when their dad walked out?
Oh, man, yeah. And so that's something that Noel doesn't talk about. Noel always says, didn't affect me like that.
Bottles it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I'm not going to write songs about that. So I'm not going to all these angst.
Almost
songs.
Because he's pissed off at his dad and he doesn't want to give him the time
exactly
of day.
Exactly that. Yeah. 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 What would you see yourself, dog or cat?
I'd see myself as a dog, I think.
Yeah.
But then there's a lot of elements to me where I'm a massive deep thinker. And, you know, when you were saying last night you couldn't get to sleep till 5, I'm like that pretty much every night.
Really?
Like, thankfully, I was getting home at 6 in the morning on the first train. So I was out like a light as soon as my head touched the pillow. But I am one of those guys, because my brain is 100 miles an hour all day. And obviously when you're spending all day sending out emails, like, where's this conversation at? What's going on with that conversation? Because I'm constantly trying to get gigs and get guests.
Of course, yes.
So you're always like, your brain's a spider web and there's a million and one things happening at once. And so when I finally get into bed, and I never really go to bed before 1 anyway, but even then I get in there, and I'm just like, I just can't switch off.
Yeah.
And it keeps me awake at night.
Oh, dude.
And a lot of it is dark thoughts. Like, I almost hate bedtime more than any other time of day.
I'm the same.
It worries me.
I hate the thought of having to go there. As soon as I lay down, my brain goes, oh, do you remember that shit thing you did when you were 17?
That's when it gets you, doesn't it?
Yeah. Do you remember when you were fucking that girl around because you were a cunt? And I'm like, oh my God, not now. She's moved on. We've all moved on. Why am I thinking about this now? Get out of my fucking head. Yeah, you haven't got any money. I know I haven't got any money. Oh God, stop it. Stop it. Like Doug Stanhope said, he said the same thing. He goes, you know, you get to bed and you lay down, and that's when the carnival starts. Like, duh, 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 duh.
I had Doug on my podcast.
Oh, mate, Doug's brilliant.
He was incredible. He was exactly as you'd expect. It was in a hotel room, but it was on the top floor with a balcony out back. And he brings me in. He's got his suit on, like, just as he always has.
Yeah, off stage
as well.
Cheesy 70s.
Yeah, great. He gets them all secondhand. And he's like, I might have to get up and shit several times throughout the course of this interview. And there's like a bottle of Pepto-Bismol, an ashtray full of cigarettes. He's got a fucking cocktail on the go. And we ended up getting pretty smashed together, actually. There's been a few podcasts. Nick Oliveri from Queens of the Stone Age was the drunkest one I've ever done in my life. We drank a bottle of Jack over the course of an hour.
Holy shit.
So by the end of it, I was blackout drunk. Like, blackout drunk, interviewing Nick Oliveri. It's a great episode, but whenever I listen back to those ones, I hate the sound of my own voice when I'm pissed. I don't mind hearing my own voice because I've been doing it for 10 years, and you have to block that out, but I hate the way I speak when I'm drunk. I can just tell listening to it that I know I'm pissed. But hopefully other people don't. But well, now they will because I've said. But yeah.
Said it,
but
yeah.
Doug was fantastic, man. He was telling me about partying with Johnny Depp. Like, he'll stay at Johnny Depp's house because they're mates. And Johnny Depp won't surface till like 3 a.m. So Doug's been invited to stay over, but he doesn't see Johnny. So he's just in like the pool house or whatever. I guess Johnny's not even coming out today. So he'll get to go to bed. And then that's when Depp appears like, hey, you want to do some shots?
3 a.m.
Yeah, yeah. And he's a fucking animal, apparently. A wild animal. Yeah. What are we talking about?
So Doug's, I reckon, hope. So yeah, to get back to what we were saying.
Oh, the nighttime terrors.
Yes.
Crippling anxiety.
Oh, dude. And this is only recently, my mate, Paul Perry, I was talking to him, and I said, mate, I get these, because I was always saying, like, I don't have anxiety, I don't have this, that's what all these young people are using to...
Last night, where anxiety is an emotion, it's not an illness, and I'm not disrespecting anybody that goes through those feelings, but anxiety really is an emotion that you feel, which is a negative response to something that's making you uncomfortable in your life.
Yeah.
That is not the same as being depressed, bipolar, schizophrenic, any of those real illnesses.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's
and
an emotion.
I get it, but a lot of the time I'm like, just put the phone away. It's when you see people on Instagram on their stories and they're like, hello, anxiety. Yeah. And we all get it, but looking at your phone at 1 a.m. and looking at Instagram and what other people are up to and comparing yourself to them, that is not going to help the situation.
Exactly, man. So that comes up. That theme comes up.
Listen
so
to
many
a podcast,
times.
Read a book.
Yes.
Just do, even watch a film, but I would say don't even do anything that's like screen or electronic related. Read a book and just escape, get out of your own head like for a while and then you'll get perspective and you'll go, oh, okay, that story was quite nice, I feel less shit now.
Exactly. And this people have this misunderstanding that they should have this idyllic life, like everything should be just,
well, everything's
so
selective, isn't it? What you're seeing online isn't the reality of people's lives.
Of course it isn't.
It's snapshots and highlights that they've selectively chosen because they want to present this version of themselves, and we all do it.
Of course we do.
But just know that they're having shit times too. It's just they're probably not sharing it.
Exactly, man. Because you're not, you know, I'm not going to show you, I'm not going to put a picture up of me lying on the bed crying.
Yeah.
Not going to do it. One, it looks shit.
Yeah.
Two, it looks like I'm attention seeking.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, isn't it?
Just, you know,
it's a lot of it is attention seeking.
Yeah, of course
people
it is.
who do that. Yeah. I've got a friend, Jesse Leach, he's in a metal band called Killswitch Engage.
Yeah.
He was on the show early on, episode 5, and he's become a great friend in the months that have passed since then. We did a live Q&A together, spent some great times together, but he is very open on his social media about his real struggles with real mental illness and depression, and he's very open and he's great for just getting the dialogue out there in a way that isn't self-involved or indulgent. It's just like, this is where I'm at and you're not alone if you feel that way too. We need to talk about it. We need to get the dialogue out there. We need to know that it's okay. So I kind of hate when these little slogans appear, but I do like the one that's, it's okay to not feel okay.
Oh, I love that one. Yeah. I'm the same. I'm a bit like, oh, come on, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, that one. And social media is so bad for attention seeking.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not, if you, because there are so many people out there with real debilitating mental illnesses, and absolutely these people need to be told that you're not alone. If you talk about it, we can help you, we can do things. But just putting up a photo of yourself going, fuck off, man.
It's a trait that is very ingrained in like blogger culture and now influencer culture, and that is my least favourite word on the fucking planet.
Fuck off.
No, an influencer is Gandhi.
Yeah.
An influencer is Martin Luther King, Nelson Mandela. These are influencers. Ian MacKay. These are influencers, you know, not fucking someone that's putting makeup on. And I've got close friends who do it, and everybody's out there hustling and making a living, and I respect their work drive and their work ethic. But it's when these people will post a selfie of their face with a completely unrelated story.
Oh,
underneath.
Dude.
Which is basically an excuse to just show off your pretty face. And it's like, why not just say, felt cute, might delete later or something.
Exactly.
Rather than just go off on some fucking tangent nothing to do with your face.
Exactly. Or some shit like, thinking of the kids in Syria.
And it's a selfie.
Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Just own
it. So insincere. And the fact that people can't see through that, but it's like anything, isn't it? Because it is just the accepted norm now. Young people growing up see that and just think that's the done thing.
Yeah, man.
And it's like anything. If you're fed shit for long enough, then you'll eat it and you'll think it tastes great.
Yeah.
Because you've never tasted what actual art and
these
things that really change the way we think, how important they are. If you've never been given that, you don't know how special and important that is.
Yeah.
And you last night, I'll say it because it would be arrogant if you would, but I'm going to say it. People need to know what the kind of bloke that that Rich is. So last night, this guy comes up to us on the street, as many, many people do in Birmingham, because the homeless problem here is fucking rife and it breaks my heart. And you can't give change to all of them. And, you know, a lot of the time, you know that money perhaps isn't going to go to good things, because you can sometimes see, you know, if someone's got designer trainers on.
Oh, every time.
You for change.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, come on, mate.
Pull on your shoes.
But some guy came up to us both last night and he's like, I don't want any money. I just want some food. I'm starving. And you went and got him a burger and chips and a Coke.
Yeah. Well,
and this is the problem that I have. And I then went on to tell you the story about how if there's a guy with a fucking shit in his hand on the street, right?
Oh, yeah.
He's clearly crazy, comes up to you, you go, well, that's he's a freak. Mm. And you go on the you walk on the other side of the street. Now, what that person is someone that's been pushed to the fringe of his fucking mind by the brutal realities of his life that have driven him to that place. And these are the people that we need to empathize with and take care of, not fucking affluent, self-indulgent, arrogant fuckers that are just, oh, I'm struggling. We're all struggling, but these people are really struggling. And that's real mental illness. Like, that is the extent of what people who are unwell in themselves will go to and do. And these are the people that we need to fucking take care of and look after.
Well, that's what we said last night. It's like these so-called influencers that give a shit.
They laugh at that person.
Or
take a picture of them and go, look at this fucking weirdo.
Yeah, you go, mate, you know, if you give a shit, help him, ring someone, take him somewhere, take him, if you can, I don't know, take him, you wouldn't take him to your house, would you, to give him a shower? No, you're going to, because you don't really give a fuck.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what angers me. And you try and engage with these people.
But that's it. A lot of the time, they just want these people on the street. A lot of the time, they just want human fucking connection. Like, even if you can't give change to someone, maybe just stop and take the time to have a 2-minute conversation with them.
Yeah.
Because all we really want to do is be treated like human beings, isn't it? Everybody has that basic right to be treated as an equal. And I think when you just don't even look at these people and you walk past them, like, if you don't have the money, don't give them change.
I always, if I haven't got any money, I always
talk to them.
Or give them
a sandwich.
Yeah, I go, sorry, dude, but listen, take care. And that
shows that you care.
Yeah.
It doesn't cost you anything.
No, but you try,
zero effort, maximum impact.
Exactly, man. You're trying to engage with the people online, the influence, these fucking quotes, influencers.
The worst word ever.
Oh, God.
Content I hate as well.
It's just
content.
It's just
Stuart Lee nailed it,
mate. It's just fucking basic people showing basic people how to be more basic.
Yeah, if you call what you do content, you're not an artist. You know, are you going to sit there, you're writing some jokes, right? You're writing a whole new routine. Are you going to then go, I'm creating some quality content tonight here in my hotel room?
I might do it sarcastically.
Sarcastically is fine. And you know, Stuart Lee nailed it with his new special. But if you call what you do content, then you're really revealing what the depth of what you do has, which is fucking zero. A photo of your face is content and it's shit. I don't need to keep seeing it.
But then you get called out for it. You get called like, you know, you get called these people are speaking out about mental health and now you're shutting them down. You're like, no, I'm shutting that person down because they're not. They are hijacking something.
They're jumping on the bandwagon and disrespecting a very serious cause.
Exactly. In order to fucking push themselves up the ladder and get attention for themselves.
Well, it's a very fashionable cause to get behind at the moment.
Mate, well,
isn't
this is what, like, Jade Adams has said this, and she said, you know, it used to be they'd stick a woman on the bonnet of a car in a bikini to sell the car. Now they don't do that anymore. Now we're pushing mental health as a selling point. It's like,
it's not fucking glamorous. Isn't the reality of mental disease is not fucking glamorous or chic or hip.
Exactly.
As I've seen, man, and the ward that my mum used to spend half my fucking life in is now closed down because the funding's not there.
Man.
It's called the Bruce Burns Ward in Solihull Hospital, and it's gone. And it's like, no, if we're really behind these issues, we're not fucking being self-indulgent about it and just fucking, you know, losing ourselves and our own vanity.
Yeah.
Let's fucking get out there. Let's raise money for these charities. Let's take care of these people. And let's really make the government fucking step up. Because did you see that picture the other day? There was a picture on Facebook and it was a meeting in the Houses of Parliament.
There's no one there.
And there was like four fucking politicians there.
They don't give a fuck.
And these people do not care about you. Or me, or you. They just don't. And that's, I don't vote. And I'm not going to get political because I'm not a political person, obviously, because I don't vote. Fuck them all. Whoever you vote for, the government wins. I take care of myself and my immediate friends, family, and then strangers that I can show kindness to.
Yeah, man.
Just try and do good on a small level and it ripples out because the people in fucking power do not care about you.
No.
And I don't want to get on a soapbox
and
alienate anyone, but fuck it, man.
They don't give a fuck. They never have. I remember one of the first things my dad ever told me, he said, the world is corrupt from the top down.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you need to know.
Yep. Right. Well, it's money, man. Shit. Money.
It's
money
all about
and power.
Money. Of course it is. And they don't give a shit. They'd be happy if we all just disappeared. It means it's more for them. They got, oh, we have to worry about people with no money now because they're all gone.
Yeah.
You know, and of course there's more anxiety. Of course there's more mental health issues because it's fucking hard.
It's troubling times
and
we're living in, yeah.
And I looked at the news today. We've got more troubles in Northern Ireland. A journalist has been killed. We're back to the 70s. We're having power cuts.
Yeah, we've fully regressed.
It's fucking bananas.
And the fact, I'm not informed about it enough to go too much into it, but obviously all you see in the news every day is Brexit, 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 yeah. Brexit. So what the fuck else is getting any attention of these people in power? Yeah. Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing's getting done. All we're doing is just scratching our fucking heads.
Yeah. And Brexit's all about money anyway.
Of course it is.
Everything just goes back to money, and it's about businessmen trying to get more money for themselves.
And the working class in America and the UK are so fucking lost, and they're voting against their own self-interest because they're fucking being sold lies by people like Donald Trump and fucking Nigel Farage.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, man, you're fucking doing more damage to your communities by supporting these people. But I understand why they are, because they're so disillusioned with the fucking...
Of course they are. People are reaching out. If you say,
system.
Yeah, of course, you reach out amongst the shit, you know, and go, look, I have this will help you. Of course you're going to grab that hand and go, fuck it.
Yeah.
You know, really, even if it's the devil himself, you go, look, come here,
course.
I can help you out. You go, listen, that's my best option. I'm going to fucking take it.
Everybody just wants to look after themselves and those around them. And that's, you know, that's innate in us from caveman era. It's hunter-gatherer shit, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, man.
Is you protect the community. And that's what we need to get back to, is community-based living, where we're looking after our neighbours and the people on the street, on our street. That need our help, not fucking the people that are just getting fatter and richer.
Oh,
and
man, it drives me mad.
I really became politically awakened with a lowercase p at university, because I went to Exeter, which is an amazing university.
Yeah, it's a great
one. It's one of the top ones in the country. But I wasn't really aware of the upper class until I got there, because I grew up in a very middle class suburban village with very good school. It was a state school, but it wasn't like a kind of a rough one. It was very good. It was one of the highest in the country for its, you know, exam rates and whatever. And so I thought, oh, I come from a fairly affluent area. And then I got to Exeter and I was like, fuck me. When you meet people like Hugo, who that brilliant comic last night went on. And you meet these people with double barrel surnames and people who are like landed gentry aristocracy.
Old
and they
money,
are the elite. And I saw those people and how fucking... I don't want to generalise, but I've been around a lot of them to know that a lot of them are so disgusting. Their characters, their souls, they don't care about anybody else. They have no fucking sympathy. They have no generosity.
Yeah.
They're just, I am important. I'm better than you. And that's what they're brought up to feel like and think like. And that from the schools to the parents, that whole system is about protecting what they have and keeping what they have and fuck everyone else at all costs.
Yeah, man. Fuck. If you ain't in the club,
you ain't getting in.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're not traumatized by all this shit, then there's something wrong with you. So yeah, absolutely. Of course you've got anxiety. Of course you're fucking depressed. Because it doesn't seem like
there's a lot to worry about.
Fuck, of course there is, man. But know this: we're all feeling the same. That's the thing. You're not alone, and you're not all these weird thoughts. I said this the other day on another podcast. We all have weird thoughts, and
Weird are we talking, Rich?
Well, if someone... I'll give you an example, right? If someone was to hand you a baby, there's a brief second, millisecond, where you go, I could punt this over the shed. And then your brain goes, don't be daft.
Yeah.
And then you go, no, of course, it's a beautiful baby. It's always that weird thought. And everybody has the same sort of thing, you know? Just that soft bit at the top of the head, go, you know, just push it in.
Have you ever been somebody who's been interested or kind of into drugs?
What do you mean? Just
like, have you ever taken
drugs? Yeah.
I'm just trying to ask in my journalistic way. Have you done drugs?
Made it sound like I've studied them.
Yeah. Are you a Hunter S. Thompson type? Because I am very interested, and I think this goes back to growing up around an unwell mum, is I'm very interested in the limits, in the brain and its capability, its destructive power as much as its beautiful power. And I like exploring what's going on up there. And I like, you know, taking magic mushrooms and MDMA and things like this. And just
unlocking.
Experimenting and unlocking and just seeing the world in a different way. Because I feel like when you go on these trips, they obviously aren't meant to last forever, but you do see a snapshot of another reality. And, you know, our reality is what we think and feel, but it's no different or superior to anyone else's.
No.
And this is what you learn quite early on if you're around mental health issues, is what this person feels and thinks in their head is their reality.
Yeah.
It might not be yours, but that's not to say it's any less real to them.
No.
And so I'm fascinated with the limits and the you know the just the plethora of magic that can exist within one's own skull. And I love taking myself out of the day to day.
Yeah. Well, Simon Evans on his episode of this, he was talking about like scientists and.
People. I wish I had the tools and the language to talk about it in a more
expert way. It makes me realise.
I like getting fucked up is what I'm basically saying. But it's important because it teaches you, doesn't it, how to see the world differently.
Yeah, but Simon Evans said like there's doctors and that trying to examine the human brain and its capabilities and more often than not they like when you start talking about conscience or
completely.
They'll all go, no, listen, don't get involved because that's a big dark hole. There's no end to it.
There's the downside, isn't there, that drugs ruin lives and they fuck people up. And you know, there's a lot of evil drugs out there.
You don't know what it's cut with as well. The shit you're taking.
And you know, magic mushrooms are the best.
Yeah.
I think you know, it's from the earth. It's meant to be taken. Like the medicinal powers that stuff has. Like it's written about. It's studied. It's proven that people with mental health issues have benefited from psychotropic drugs. Obviously, a lot of people use cannabis now.
Yes.
And thank whoever that in places, powerful places like California, it's being legalized and that's setting a trend that, you know, is changing the way that we think about these things because, you know, street drugs, chemicals, they're obviously, there's no fucking positive qualities to that stuff other than to have a good time when you're out of your mind, which I do enjoy from time to time. But things like cannabis and magic mushrooms, things that are from the earth, natural drugs, they've been used throughout time by us as humans for positive effects. And the way that drugs have been criminalized by the government is, I think, a fucking crime. Like, the fact that they won't acknowledge that these things help these people.
Well, it's like
because it's pharma companies, isn't it? We need them on lithium and we need them on things like this line in our pockets.
And that's why Bill Hicks pointed out, he said, because they don't know how to tax them.
Exactly.
And so that's why they go, it's illegal, because we can't make any money from it.
Yeah.
Which is why they're reluctant to legalise weed.
Yeah.
Because they're like, well, we have no control over that, because you can grow that yourself. And they fucking can't get there. They're like, no, we must have every penny there. We can't have these people being self-sufficient.
How much crime would it cut out as well?
Yeah, mate. No one's going out robbing phones if you're moshed off your tits on fucking weed, eating Watsits, playing PlayStation. There was that street song, wasn't there? There was the guy that, you know, oh, I fought for my country and I go out, but every weekend I drink lager and I get smashed up.
Yeah.
And you go, but there's other students, and they're the ones that are getting, you know, they're being treated like criminals. You're like, yeah, but I'm just sitting indoors playing PlayStation and eating crisps and I'm not doing anything. I'm not outing anyone.
I've never been a big fan of weed. I had about a year where I smoked it where I was about 16, but weed actually for me has a very negative effect. It makes me very paranoid. Very paranoid.
Sends me to sleep. I just doze
off.
Does
it? It sends me to a really parajuana, I call it.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, I don't fuck with weed at all.
Do you think
which is weird because mushrooms don't give me paranoia at all.
Yeah, right.
They have the opposite effect. I love mushrooms. I've only done them about 8 times in my whole life. It's not like I'm out doing them every week, but whenever I do, I make it an event, an occasion, and we go out to Epping Forest. Do you know what I mean? Like, do cool shit where you're in nature and you're just reconnected to the earth.
Yeah.
Without sounding all hippy-dippy. Like, you know, especially when you live in an urban environment, it's great and important to get away from that and escape and get reconnected to life and growth. And, you know, again, going back to my accident, like, I learned about the healing powers of the body through that. And that's crazy, isn't it? That you can snap and break and, you know,
the body's
totally
incredible
fuck
machine.
Yourself up and then it can heal. And
that gets you
thinking about life and this bigger purpose, this bigger picture.
Yeah.
You know, it's all connected. It is. It's energy. It's flowing.
And that's why we need to come away from our phones.
Come away from your phones. Get reconnected with yourself.
Man.
And you know, you won't always like what you see.
Yeah.
But it's important to know that's a side of you that exists and you acknowledge it.
Man. Oh, the biggest stepping stone for me, the biggest marker was when I was like, oh, mate, I'm a bit of a cunt.
Yeah, well, that's a tough realization to come to grips with, isn't it?
Exactly.
But it's important.
And once you get to that point, there's only one way to go, it's forward.
Yeah.
You're right, I'm a cunt. Okay, let's work it out. Why are you a cunt? And then you go from that. And then he says, I go, oh, actually, fundamentally, I'm not a cunt. I've just been doing cunty things. Why am I doing
it's
cunt
easy
things?
To be a cunt. Yeah. It's not easy to be a good, nice, honest, decent
yeah,
person.
I got you.
It takes work. And there's an element of spirituality to that, I think, and self-improvement. And you want to be the best version of yourself.
Yeah.
And that takes work.
Of course
you know,
it does.
If you want to look physically good, you've got to go to the gym. And it's the same with your brain. Like, if you want to be a kind, good person, you have to work at that. You know, you have to be a little more selfless.
Of course you
and
do.
A little more self-aware.
Yeah, man, yeah.
Otherwise, you are just a lazy cunt who's not contributing anything positive to the world. Do you know what I mean?
You're right, man. Right. Matt, this has been fantastic.
Right on,
Thank
brother.
Thank you so much, man.
Thanks for having me
Cheers.
On the show.
Insane in the membrane. So that was Matt Stocks. I told you, he's good, isn't he? He's a nice lad. He's just all you got to do is just sit him down, stick a microphone in front of him, and off he goes. He's absolutely brilliant. He's great company, great chat. You know, and it's interesting to see, again, you know, like everybody else, like everybody, we all have our highs, we have our lows. It's just part of the human experience, isn't it? We just, you know, no one's living a perfect life, you know, even though it's portrayed everywhere that, you know, you think people are. Nobody is. Everybody's got a bit of sadness going on and a bit of happiness and then a bit of nothing, you know. It's all part of it. It's all part of it. So thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time. Cheers.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.